Beams of Darkness by Sam Gabriel. From Thanks for Playing. Read by the author. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey and Clutch. Chapter 2. Quarterly Projections. B passed Terezi.
Your name is Terezi Pyrope, and you are paying for your crimes. You stand tall and erect, with your head thrown back and your eyes open wide as the light fills your body, fills your soul, fills everything that you are and will ever be. The light bathes you, redeems and purifies you, feeds the fire in you that consumes only the regret. The first time you were 5 sweeps old, and the second time 7 sweeps old. Now you're 8, 9. You and John were fucking up for a while. You really aren't sure for how long exactly. Just like how you really aren't sure how many of you there are in this clearing. What you're realizing is that you aren't actually very good at sensing your own mind. You can read the younger versions of yourself because you remember being them, but you know the previous you, the 7-sweep-old version, didn't really know that you were here, are here as well. You sniff and all you can smell is John and Jane and you. That's not very helpful. How many more times are you going to die? You'd rather not know. It's more fun this way. All you really know is that you feel more alive here than anywhere else. You hand Jane to John, and at a gesture, he takes to the sky with you. It is working, the tiara, but it isn't working very well, or really, it's working too well. He's just a drone. So much of Jane's personality was maintained when she wore this one. It was probably tuned specifically to her, you think anyway. You'll make inquiries with the original manufacturer. That is your next stop, after all, and you hope their commitment to customer service is up to the task. It would be a shame to lose John as a friend so soon. You know it'll happen eventually, but you'd love to have a lighter touch until then. And you'd really love to become best friends with Jane. You and her have so much in common. You're gonna get along great. Your name is Terezi Pyrope, and you will never be alone again.
Be present, Dave. Okay, so this shit right here. Your name is Dave Strider. This is an example of something that is not cool. And it is too goddamn early in the morning for this. Like, drugs and,
What else isn't cool, Dave?
I don't fucking know what is and ain't cool, Zaz. I'm like a million goddamn years old and I live in a goddamn tower from goddamn science fucking fiction.
Swearing?
Oh, fuck off, nah.
Yeah, swearing isn't cool.
Hey, Tuna? Fuck! Let me say again, off!
And you are teaching it to us right now. You are filling our impressionable think pans with words like fuck and goddamn and drugs.
Okay, first off, you goddamn little shit.
You are being a bad role model. What are we to do?
You learned those words from Latch, not me. That's just first off.
Troll Mother is very vulgar, yes.
No, second off, you should have seen the kind of shit I was exposed to at your age.
Wait. That's what we are fucking saying, though, Uncle Dave.
Nah, hold up. I meant the literal opposite of that.
Yeah, that's why we're wanting to watch you guys train.
Oh my god, Tuna.
So they can save the world like you did.
We did the literal opposite of that, Zaz. And that ain't why anyway. Fuck off. Y'all just want to watch us swing cool as shit swords around and be awesome.
So what you were saying, contrary to your earlier point, is that your training is cool.
Jeez, fucking wept.
And would be, inverted commas, cool as shit to watch.
Where'd you learn to be this goddamn fucking annoying?
Human mother.
Fuck, I love you now.
Hee hee.
What the fuck are... Oh, and you too, Tuna. Zaz?
An awkward, sloppy fist bump from Tuna and Zaz flips you off. Hell yeah.
What the fuck are inverted commas, anyway?
Quotation marks.
Why don't you just say fucking quotation marks, then?
Why don't you just let us watch you fucking train?
Nah, you are the literal worst.
Hee hee.
You have reached the door to the Spire's strife chamber. It is exactly the same as the Bunker's strife chamber. Indeed, it is the same one. Jade and Roxy had transplanted the whole thing piece by piece when y'all moved into the Spire last year. You crouch, which puts your niece and nephew's heads above yours, so they'll feel less like you're talking down to them. Carcat taught you that. You decapsulog Kaladvok and rest it on your shoulder.
Look, don't get me wrong, swords are cool. They're cool to look at, and I'm not gonna lie to you and say what we do in that room ain't really fucking cool to look at sometimes. We ain't doing it to be cool. We're doing it to practice killing people. When I was your age, I had a somebody who didn't know the difference. And they tried to teach me. And there ain't no difference. And it...
You pause calmly. Extremely calmly is the way that you pause. It cost me. It cost them. And I would die 100 fucking deaths if it meant none of y'all ever had to touch one of these. Same goes for Becky. You look at me. You remove your shades. All you look at me? Right here. They do.
I have.
1 beat. 2 beats. 3 beats. 4. The shades go back on. Now give me 5. Naya and Tuna do. It doesn't hurt nearly as bad as when Latch does it, but they're getting there. Sash just flips you off. Hell yeah. Don't tell none of your moms. I told you that.
We know how gods work, Uncle Dave.
No, you fucking don't.
We know how ectobiology works, too.
The fuck? Congratulations, so?
So who was the somebody?
Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. You stand. You open the door to the strife chamber. And you laugh at yourself for being so stupid. Give them a grin over your shoulder. Yell, I never met him. You step inside and close the door, locking it behind you.
I could hack that shit.
Yeah, you won't, will you? Because I'd be sad and fucking disappointed, wouldn't I? Get lost.
Yes, Uncle Dave.
Yes, Uncle Dave. Whatever.
They scurry. Fucking kids. Be past Terezi.
It is depressing how easy it is to manipulate her immediate capitulation. It turns out that materializing in front of a receptionist in 1954 as an obvious troll is in fact enough to get you an instant meeting with Betty Crocker. You impress her by being impossible for her to hit. You act just confident enough to be cute for a teal blood, but not so superior that it pisses her off. You imply that you know how to defeat her boss, and by the end of your first visit, you've convinced her to change the company's branding from fuchsia to red. You'd been kidding. You visit her several times over the course of the next few decades, and just like that, about 20 sweeps later, or for you, 4 hours after you left Alternia, the head of Crocker Corp R&D is handing you a brand new tiara, specifically tuned to John's brainwave patterns. You go back to John's Lucis's four-wheel motor device, make the swap, open the trunk, put the Jane tiara back on Jane and untie her. What was that the man had called you? Eris. John asks what you're smirking about. You tell him not to worry about it, and he stops worrying about it. He's such a great friend. Jane calls shotgun because that's what you wanted her to do, and the two of you hit it off immediately, just like you knew you would. It's so weird that you were in such a bad mood 4 hours ago. This is great. Where to next? Oh, yeah. Might as well start at the very beginning.
Be present, Jake.
Oh, man, now I've got to start at the very beginning. It didn't give you one of those checkpoints at all. No, I think that's later.
Damn and blast. Well, steady on, Becky. Show those sons of bitches what for.
Hell yeah, Grandpa.
Grandpa. The name sets you twiddling your mustache. For a duration of time equivalent to, oh, say, the time it takes to construct the thought in your mind, you don't feel so bad.
What is that woman's name again? The one who keeps appearing on the screen in some distress? That's Cortana.
I must say, I find her enchanting.
Oh, she's so annoying. She interrupts the gameplay. But you're meant to be rescuing her, I thought. Yeah, the Gravemind has her. But you see the same little scenes every time you retry. It makes you walk all slow.
If Jade's youthful enthusiasm and joie de vivre, pardon your French, whose pardon are you asking, have given way to a more relaxed, maternal kind of energy than the child she once was, lives on in Rebecca Harley, to be sure. Becky Harley, to be absolutely sure. You still don't quite understand why he finds Becky a sufficiently masculine permutation of his birth name, but by Jove, you'll abide by his wishes.
Oh, bad luck there. I'm usually so good at this part. Good thing you came over and not me, Tuna. He thinks he's so much better than me at Halo, and he's so not.
I won't breathe a word of your brief, anomalous, and wholly unrepresentative lapse of skill. After all, what is your birthday?
You better fucking not.
He grins at you. It is a grin that you recognize, if framed by white spikes of tufted fur. It is Jade when she smiles despite herself. It is Roxy when her joke is too idiotic even for her to commit to. And most of all, it is you. You understand, Becky. You saw yourself in Jade, but you see yourself in Becky, the you that lived on an island, tested himself against the foes of a child and thought himself a man. You desperately hope that... Is that right? Is it hope that you feel? Hope that he and the rest of the children will not have to learn the limits of their own bravery, will not have to face the shame that you faced because your foes will finally be slain. That your mess, your friend's mess, your generation's mess will finally be attended to. No. It is love that you feel, love and the firm hand of responsibility, duty. The need to be good enough for yourself, yes. For your best friend, yes. And for Becky, and Zazerpan, and Naya, and Tuna. Yes. It is love.
Where's that fucking checkpoint?
But it is not hope. Be past, Terezi.
Well, that didn't work. It turns out that you can't make Mind Fang fall in love with Red Glare. Irania Circuit is a massive bitch in every single timeline, apparently, and Red Glare has standards. Red Glare herself, you could barely even read, which does make sense now that you think about it, but it was still neat to meet her in person. Oh well, oh well, oh well. Trying to do it for real, that'd mostly been for fun anyway. At least you now have the original cane and the original journal, which is the main thing. You have John stop himself from taking you there in the first place, so the timeline will revert. Engage in a little creative writing, swappity-swap, and
hecto-sweeps in the future. But not many.
Well, that didn't work. The reviews are in, and your latest release seems not to have engaged its target audience like you hoped it would. Not even after several revisions. Hard to please, this target audience. Change so much as a word of that journal, and the whole thing just doesn't capture Vriska's attention. It's like she doesn't even care. Maybe it's John's handwriting? You have Jane write it instead? No, nothing. You try your handwriting once just for grins, and no. Bad idea. Good thing you have many, many, many more.
Be present, Rose.
Human mother, where is Troll mother? Pardon? She did not come back from training with you, or is she?
Ah, today is a shield day, Kanaya. Latula is doing her rounds.
But it's Sunday.
Sunday is only a day of rest for gods who are not real, dear.
Yes, that is a sentence which makes sense. And where's your brother? He said something about, inverted commas, pounding some noobs. I believe noobs means Becky.
Your family consists of 12 people, all related by ectobiology, marriage, or adoption. One third of this group consists of parents, all of them women. Soon after Becky and Zazerpan were born, you sat Latula, Roxy, and Jade down and presented to them a policy. The four of you would, in front of the children, only refer to each other by first name in order to avoid confusion. And through this bit of maneuvering, you hoped to put a stop to Roxy Harley Nalalan's plans to ensure that your children address you as Mom the Second. She complained, of course, and you reminded her that she named her eldest Zazerpan, and she owed you one. She relented, but only on the condition that the four of you accept whatever the children ended up calling you as a result, without complaint, so as not to stifle their free spirits. You saw what she was doing, of course, but at least you wouldn't have to hear Mom the Second, or for that matter, Babe, from your own children. You accepted. And in fairness, you actually do very much enjoy Human Mother.
Hey, sis, how's it going?
Hello, Zazerpan. I wasn't aware you were here. But you cannot hope to beat Roxy fucking Harley, nay fucking Lalande, in a maneuver off. She is simply the best there is.
Yeah, Naya invited me over.
Yes, I told you wouldn't mind.
How very thoughtful of you. Of course I don't mind. I can fetch you some refreshments. And what's even worse, Dave wasn't part of this agreement, so he doesn't have to take bro from either of Roxy's spawn. That would have been a nice consolation.
Actually, I don't think we're staying.
We wanted to interrogate Trollmother about training. We think she will be more tractable than you or Uncle Dave.
How very duplicitous of you.
Yes, I thought so.
Yes, so we're going to find her.
Run along, then. You smile.
I think she'll have reached Sector 3 of the main promenade by now, so if you follow Causeway North to the Outer Ring, you should catch her. Oh, there's a maintenance tunnel off of Causeway North that's even faster.
You know, I believe you're right. Good luck tricking Latula into telling you things you aren't supposed to know.
Thank you, Human Mother.
You were being sarcastic, but you can't actually tell if she was being sarcastic in return. That warms your heart in ways you can barely express, so you only say, I love you very much.
No hugging.
Yes, hugging.
You're embarrassing me.
Loser. Your mom loves you. That's so lame.
This is what I did not want to happen, and now it is happening.
God, I'd be so embarrassed right now if I was you.
It keeps happening.
Rough jade grooves in a red snarl of spite and death, words scrawled in blood with a cadaver's hand, still wet, still fresh, still soft. A ring binds an ally, shatters a bond in a spiral curl of paradox space. A congregation the size of a world in the ebony throes of worshipful malice on streets of purple with banners of crimson glasses reflecting a tray held by rheumatic, shuddering hands and a face lined and pocked around vacant, yet terrified eyes.
Sis, are you good?
And you're Rose Lalande? Mother? Daughter? Sister? And you pull Zazerpan in as well, and hold both of them so tightly, not too tightly, you hope, and you do not scream, tears do not fill your eyes, and your expression is calm? It is kind. It is loving and indulgent. You even manage a smirk, and you say, "There, now I've embarrassed both of you. Give Latula my diamonds." And you release them, and it was not too awkward, and they could not see what you just saw, and they do not know, and they will never know.
Okay, we will.
I really do love you very much.
I love you as well, human mother.
Be safe. Happy birthday, Caesarpan.
Fucking lit.
Goodbye immediately.
They will never, ever, ever know. You wave as they leave, wait for them to disappear around the nearest corner, wait for them to be completely out of earshot. And run like hell to your father.
Be past Terezi. And none of your ideas fucking work. You'd saved your best for last. Killing Tavros before Vriska got too attached just made her pine for remorse somehow. Killing Eridan made her vacillate posthumous flush for him, and that was just sad. And all of that would be fine. You want her pale. She can have anything pitch or flush that she wants, but Vriska's the kind of person who goes all in on whatever, whoever she's into, all in. Even if they're dead. So you try to find out why she's like this. Maybe if the little thief learns to share, she'll have more room for you. You look into her mind, you bathe in her mind, and it gleams with light. And the light carves from the darkness her passion, her confidence, her drive, and her cunning. But it blazes like the surface of the sun itself over her greed, her arrogance, her self-loathing, and her fear. These are her irons in the fire. These are what motivate her most of all, and she stokes them hotter and hotter, their light shining brighter and brighter all the time. And it is already too bright for you to see clearly. It looks too much like the light which burns your eyes. It's a pain you're too used to. It's hard to focus on, hard to plot a path through, hard to assemble a causal framework. It's like being blind. The problem is that you aren't getting much more than snapshots. You're watching her from a distance, watching yourself from the shadows, dipping a frond, a prong, a nub into the stream of events, then jumping forward and seeing how it goes. Sometimes it doesn't turn out anything like what your powers told you it would be. Killing Tavros early on tends to take care of that, but still, your sight only goes so far forward. You're pushing it farther forward all the time, but some of these balls just take too long to roll, and you don't know when to wiggle or sit them because you don't know when to be there to do that. This isn't how your powers were meant to work. This retcon thing, it's powerful, but it's not natural. You need to start living in these timelines. And to do that, you need to make another trip to the storm.
Be present, Latula. Three prongs of your left hand press against the wall as you walk, dragged with a stiffness that clenches your whole frond.
Does it, like, hurt for you to do that?
Green light pulses outward from the points of contact, a circle with three wavy arms that spreads across and into the metal, cladding the entire corridor.
Kinda? Hurt more at first. Got used to it, got better at it. Like, the thing is, it's not how my powers were, like, meant to work. Like, Rose says two people with the same aspect running into each other at all is really super rare. So this whole seer of mind, can't see night of mind thing is, like, that's like an exploit in the code. Or like a human Easter egg thing, yeah. So all this extra shit I do with it is, like,
speedrunning techniques?
Fucking exactly. But yeah, now I barely feel it because I'm used to it. Like claw grip or, you know, wave dashing.
Wave dashing doesn't hurt.
Yeah, but it's hard.
No, it's not. You just suck. You grin and ruffle his absolute mop of hair with your right hand. See the glint of gold on your finger amid the black locks, and guilt freezes you. Eons pass in a blink.
Troll mom? You stopped doing the mindy thing. Are you okay? Troll mom? Troll mom, are you okay? I think you're having a panic attack. Just fucking get some money. Just breathe, okay?
You breathe because someone told you to.
In.
In.
Out.
Out.
In.
In.
Out.
Out.
To. Fucking what? Oh. Shit.
Your name is Latula Lalonde, and you are standing in Sector 3 of Lejeune Memorial Spire, Gameria, Earthsea, the New Universe, and next to Mituna. Mituna, who is so tall now that he hardly has to tilt up his head to look you in the eyes through that absolute mop of hair. Mituna, who is radiating concern and fear And something else.
I'm sorry.
Guilt.
No.
You don't suck. I didn't mean it.
Pupa.
No.
It was a joke.
No, it was fucking funny.
Jesus, troll, mom.
So it wasn't me?
You nod.
It's never you. It's other shit.
He nods. He knows not to ask about other shit.
There isn't a whole lot that the kids don't know about. They know who Terezi Pyrope is. They know why they are never allowed to leave the spire or the bunker before that, and they do not want to leave. That was a mistake that you were not going to allow them to make. And it took a fray motif between you and Rose to determine the path that would prevent it. That path involved telling them a whole lot of the truth, and in more detail than any child their age is school-fed about. But they don't get to know, in any real detail, what happens on missions. They don't get to watch any of you train because accidents happen. And Kanaya doesn't know about Kanaya. And Mituna doesn't know about Mituna. You want to wrap your fronds around him, but they won't move.
Can I have a hug?
You knock the wind out of him, but you don't care. Now that it's he, you can tell he's your son and you're being stupid. It's been almost a sweep since you had an attack that bad.
Thanks, Pupa. You took care of me. I fucking love you.
Love you too, troll mom.
Hey, loser.
He backs away from you. You ruffle his hair again.
What is it with moms and hugs today?
What's wrong, Zaz? You feel left out? Got a hug with your name on it, girl.
Now your hugs suck.
The hugs rule. Oh, you're pusher. Fuck.
Well, fair enough, man. So?
I didn't ask her.
Me too, now. We talked about this.
Leave troll mom alone for now, Niall. This isn't a good day, okay?
What's up?
We were gonna get you to tell us about training.
Not sure why I do that, though.
Because it's my birthday.
What's a birthday? Is that like a weird human concept, like friendship or love?
Oh, shut up. How about because you're cool?
Not that cool, Zaz.
When?
What took you guys so long anyway?
We thought you ditched us to go kick my brother's ass at Halo.
And we thought Trollmother was at home.
But it's Sunday.
She didn't do Shields last Sunday, did she?
Fucking duh, that was last Sunday.
Oh, right.
Why does everyone know how Sundays work but me?
Whatever, let's go. I do still need to kick Becky's ass at Halo.
Damn right, Pupa.
Hey, it's Jasperus. What you doing over there, buddy?
The little cat strolls up to Zazapan's ankles, swirls around the front of each, right to left, then back. Your legislator scoops the beast up, purrs, fill your hear ducts.
Wanna come with us, girl? Latch, is it cool if she comes with us?
Jasper's goes where she wants, dude. Don't know why she likes you so much. With a shrug that squeezes the cat tighter against her chest, Zazapan Harley turns to follow her friends, your children, back down the corridor.
Hey, Zaz!
Her ears flick backward to face you. She cocks her head just like her mom does. Happy birthday. A fuzzy thumbs up. Ears front, head straight. A little hard to read that girl sometimes. You turn back around, hold your left frond just so, and keep doing the mindy thing.
Be past Terezi. Good old her industrious collaboration. You had no idea she was so experienced at keeping her friends within arm's reach. Of course, what you need is a bit more specialized and portable, but the two of you figured out a solution that was just perfect. Or it will be perfect once the technology exists to make it in the first place. Zappity zap, you're a scratch away, and her incredulous competence is doing a really good job of acting like she isn't surprised to see you. And you're doing a really, really good job of acting like you aren't surprised to see her. You thought you were going to have to make friends with a whole new one, but no, here she is, her illustrious colonization, with a head full of memories of your sassy ass and just as much anger at everything, and, man, on this earth, she is making it everyone's problem. Fucking goals! You feel for her. You know what it's like to be up against something as big as this, to want to kill something as big as Lord English. Just like Vriska does. Just like Vriska does. It isn't cheating. It's not. It's different. It's different, and she's different. She really is, and she's so lonely, and you're so lonely, and it's just some papping in a big pile of human money that her intriguing consolation keeps around specifically for flings like this. It's just a fling! Vriska will understand, and she's certainly never going to know. You'll make it up to her. You will. You'll start making it up to her right fucking now, because her inadvertent construction has already built the blueprints you and she came up with. She built them for someone else, something the original Barris, whatever, blah. The ship is yours now, and it is perfect. You call it the Sidebar, and it has everything your two best friends could ever want. Food, water, lots of video games and movies and stuff for John, tons of cooking supplies for Jane. They're gonna love it in there. It's like a whole hive that they can't leave, and they won't want to leave it anyway, because the Tiaras make sure they're happy there. You're so nice to your friends. They're so lucky to have you. With the push of a button, the Sidebar winks out of existence, and into an especially ideal pocket of the furthest ring. At your request, Jane de-ages you, until you look just a little older than 5 sweeps, and John zaps you right outside your hive on Alternia at the appropriate moment in time. You help John and Jane through the fenestrated plane that is the only way on or off the Sidebar, so safe. Disconnect it from the power supply. Capture log both in your super-convenient wallet, clamber up the ladder, snap to Resipyrope's neck, and start trying shit. And boy, do you have a lot of shit to try. This could take a while.
Be present, Dirk. Your daughter barrels through the door to your room, unannounced, uninvited, and panting like she's just run 10 laps around the Spire's flight deck.
Dirk, you're going to want to sit down.
I am sitting down.
So you are.
She looks like absolute shit. You look like absolute shit. Not a chuckle, not a sneer, not a fuck you, Dirk, not the tiniest acknowledgement. Well, fuck, it's one of those days then. You rise, direct her to your most comfortable chair, and deposit her there with one extremely light shove. What did you see, Rose? 3 quick, shallow breaths. Then words pour from her like a fire hose that took elocution lessons. Jane is alive. Suddenly you are sitting down again. She is at Crocacorp. She is old, wrinkled, white-haired, and gaunt, barely cognizant of her surroundings. Her eyes, Dirk, her fucking eyes, her eyes! She appears to be playing the role of Therese Pyrope's secretary. When I saw her, she was fetching fucking coffee. She could barely hold the tray, Dirk. She was so old, she was so old, she was so... Her words give way to breaths, gasping, hoarse. Not sobs, but sobs in another language, revs from an engine stuck in neutral as it slides backwards down a steep, muddy hill. She stills, blinks, and then she is Rose Lalande. Cockhat can mobilize 4 mechanized battalions and 3 Lucis battalions in 48 hours. Urban infantry, riot, snipers, air support superiority, and assault. Terezi won't expect the audacity, and with a single objective, the chances will...
Idiot.
Why? During a mission, she's an objective. During brainstorming, she's Jane Crocker. Jane Crocker wouldn't want the cost in lives. Therefore, scale down the action. 3, no 2 platoons at most. Comfortably shieldable. Getting your wife involved. Right track. Personal. Still a bit big for personal. Gods only then. Why?
Because you said so, Dirk.
Why? As commanders, our narrative power is diffused outwards into the troops, into the big picture. Good for grand spectacle, weak for interpersonal pathos. Make us islands, and the action has to take place on us, in us. The right answer to the wrong question.
Well, fuck me, Dirk. All you said was why.
Do you want an editor? Or a ghostwriter?
With stakes this high, I'll take whichever gets the fucking job done, Dirk.
A fair point. Which gods? All of them. Why? Each of us delivers something different, a different narrative device. All of those devices pooled indicates maximum value of Jane Crocker's...
Idiot. Why?
Finish your sentence. As an objective, this isn't transactional, Rose. It's a performance. It needs to please the audience, not buy it. Motivation. I'll be honest, Dirk, I never knew Jane very well. Your loss. You knew her for longer. Nearly 12 years longer than you. So, what was she like? Here's where we get to some speculation, but hypothetically, it doesn't matter.
You just raked me over the coals for disregarding her personality.
No, I called you an idiot.
For disregarding her personality!
I wanted to see if you would get there, and you didn't, but that's understandable, because I only just this moment got there myself.
Oh my God, Dirk!
When did I say you were on the right track? She turns the clock back in her mind, turning her sigh into a nearly intelligible form of subvocalized frustration. when I mentioned Latula.
No, you mentioned a utility that she could offer. I mentioned your wife.
And you called her that. Instead of Latula Lalande, you called her my wife. Why?
Why not? Her value to this story is only by proximity to you.
Well, that's a bit fucking dehumanizing.
Are you laughing, Dirk?
Jesus fucking Christ, Rose. How possible is it, really, to dehumanize a person any further when they already exist here, in a universe with fucking Spurb as its fundament?
That's a fair question.
Another fair question, why are you being a rude piece of shit about my fucking wife?
How is it rude to note someone's pinnacle importance by association to the main character of the universe?
And this is an interesting point. I used to think that it was Latula Pyrope, not Rose Lalande, who was the main character.
Pyrope? Was this before we were married?
And for several years thereafter. Old habits, a side effect of not sparing much thought for your relationship.
I notice you've eased up on that policy as of late.
And isn't that interesting as well? But let's put a pin in that.
Very well, so why did you think she was the main character?
I was conflating her role with yours, without understanding its nuances. The narrative had bent and folded and twisted to accommodate her like she had stabbed herself into it. But she didn't do that. Didn't put herself in that position. You did. Rose Lalande flies to her feet and stands tall, imperious, a tower of ice with a boiling center.
Don't you dare trivialize her agency. Choosing to come with me nearly killed her.
Restoring her to life nearly killed her.
No, no jokes about this. Not now, not ever. You don't know what it did to her, and I'm not going to tell you.
If I'm going to ghostwrite this story, I believe I need to know.
Your need to know can go fuck itself with regard to this, Dirk.
Rose. This could be the point that all of this turns on.
And that point can go fuck itself. And so can you.
All right then, just tell me the story.
I just motherfucking said!
I didn't say to tell me what happened. I said to tell me the story. This is too important. A beat. And then the ice begins to melt from the outside, works its way inward. She sits. The boiling gives way to a simmer. Latula Pyrope wasn't in heaven. She was in hell. A hell so intense that after she left, it continued to burn her for years. In some ways, it still does.
Triumph. You grip her shoulders. Rose. That wasn't hell. It was a forge. Your mother paid the smith's fee.
Jesus Christ, Dirk!
Listen to me, Rose.
Your mother paid for her. Your father honed her. You burned your hand on her when you drew her from the fire. Rose, she is a sword. The sword. The sword that can slay the dragon.
Well, that's intensely romantic?
Yes, or whatever indeed the fuck it's supposed to be.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
I don't know. I didn't check the spreadsheet when I got up this morning.
Why are you making jokes about us? The policy, why did it change?
I saw no further need for it. I took a long look some time ago and concluded that you could give Dave and Carcat a run for their money at this point. I couldn't get in your way if I tried. She sits dumbstruck, her eyes wide.
Thank you, Dirk. That might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
And you did say it to manipulate her, but it's all the more effective for...
hell with it.
I did say it to manipulate you, but it's all the more effective for the fact that it's true. She throws herself forward in her chair and embraces you briefly, then recedes, businesslike once more.
So what's the occasion? Do you need to kill Jade again?
Not unless she hurts Roxy.
They've been married for over 12 years, Dirk.
12 years and 9 months to the day, actually. Are you going to the party later?
Oh, you should be there. The kids like you.
Swiffer's bringing her candy apples. Those are actually really good.
Oh, is Swiffer Eggmop bringing her famous candy apples? That sounds lovely.
Dirk, why do you hate Swiffer?
She is exceedingly nice to everyone.
Why do you ask me questions and then answer them yourself?
Oh, fuck you.
She's grinning. So are you.
What's gotten into you? Why are you so happy?
Jane is still... Oh, God, Jane. The mental image forces its way back into your mind. You stop grinning. She already did. Jane, back on track. Paradoxically, which appropriately makes me think that I am in fact on the right track, it is partially for that reason that I am happy. Not, of course, because she is suffering, but because what has been the outcome of every vision you have received from Skaia on this planet? The establishment and maintenance of the status quo. So why would Skaia show Jane Crocker to us? In what way is inviting us to storm Crocker Corp HQ maintenance of the status quo? More to the point, in what way could this vision possibly
protect Terezi? Dirk!
Rose, this isn't just the day we rescue the damsel in distress.
It's the day we kill Terezi Pyrope.
It's the day that we slay the dragon.
Oh my fucking god, Dirk!
Wait. Today. Today, Swiffer Eggmop's candy apples will have to wait. Why the urgency, though? No, that's the wrong question. Good. What is the right question? Why has Skaia chosen to abandon Terezi Pyrope? That is indeed the right question, and the answers to it are multitudinous. I have certainly spent a frankly embarrassing amount of time contemplating the various reasons that I would personally be in favor of Skaia finding a new story to tell. I think the main thing is sunk cost fallacy. Skaia is both author and audience, and as an audience, you keep reading the same book, or better example, watching the same fucking television show because you liked it at first. It's gone downhill. You hope it will get better if you just keep watching it, but the magic is gone. And eventually you realize that you've wasted your time. You put down the book. You find a new one to read or write. You change the fucking channel, Rose. And that transition is instant. Skaia is bored. I think it has been bored for a long time, at least since we liberated Gaimeria, possibly longer, and it wants to see what else is on. Your vision was Skaia asking you for an elevator pitch. It's telling you that this is your chance to impress it. Do it now. Do it fast. Jane Crocker doesn't specifically matter to this scenario except to convey that sense of urgency. What is my reasoning for that, Rose? Her age, passage of time. There's your symbolism. How about character? Hers? No, ours. Everyone is sympathetic to her, but you, Roxy, and Jake will all move heaven and earth to save her as quickly as possible. God, especially Jake. Very good. All right, let's say that all of this is true. What happens to our safety net? That's the beauty. It stays intact. Even though Terezi Pyrope no longer controls the narrative, but she still does. You just told me Skaia had abandoned her. No, I told you Skaia wanted to abandon her. It has to watch something, it has to write something, and we're the only other players available. If we fail the test, then it doesn't have a choice. It has to return to her, no matter how monotonous her story has become, which means it still needs all of us. But the moment we kill her, all bets are off. And a bet is what this is, make no mistake, and as the main character, the greatest risk has to fall to you. So I'm going as well. No. What? This part is not going to be fun. If this was years ago, probably any time before Operation Abscond, I would have told you that you didn't sufficiently value your own life for its risk to matter to the narrative in this way. That isn't accurate anymore, but what is accurate is that you value Latula's life more.
No.
Which means you can't go with her on this mission.
No!
You cannot wield a sword with your needles in your hands, Rose.
Fuck off!
Every time you have fielded her, you have fielded yourself. You acted like it was my idea just now, but you would have found any reason you needed in the end. She cannot be your sword, not to the extent that this narrative needs if you insist on protecting her, if you will not draw her from yourself. That's...
Is that supposed to be sexual, Dirk?
Many stories are.
Are you invoking Freud?
Many stories do.
Oh my god!
The fact that it is me bringing this up, given how distasteful I find this subject, should in any fair universe demonstrate to you how serious I am about this. This is key, Rose.
Well, we live in the universe which has sperm as a fundament, don't we? So you can apparently get fucked, can't you?
Metaphorically. And anyway, so long as we're being Freudian, if she is the key, am I not the latch?
Let's not mix metaphors.
Fuck you, Dirk.
And with a stressed, mostly humorless chuckle from her, the worst of the tension is broken. It's a mostly symbolic gesture anyway, the safety net. If it's empty symbolism, why will Skaya care? I said mostly. Symbols are powerful, and need only a kernel of truth to become load-bearing, and this one has more than a kernel. No safety net in existence could be safe enough for you to actually trust with your wife's life. That voice that whispers in the back of your mind, Rose, that says that you and I are wrong, that heroes can still die. It's about her. She is silent. So you raise the tension again, because you have no choice. Rose, you don't have anything else to risk. She looks at you, a flame in her eye, and sees the lie, the deliberate lie, and nods. You are God. Damned right I don't. Then trust your wife. Trust your sword. Like I trusted you 28 years ago. Because Skaya itself knows, Rose, that we have tried everything else already. Be past Terezi.
You try everything you can think of, and some things you can't think of. You're a good person, you're a bad person, you protect everybody, you kill everybody but you and her. You give her moments of clarity, personal breakthroughs, victories, defeats. It does indeed take a fucking while. And you start to run into problems. One problem in particular, well, not one problem in particular, a whole massive steaming load of problems in particular, but one particular problem is very particularly weird. His name is Gamzee Makara, and he will not leave you the fuck alone. You see, your attempts, all of them, every single last one of them, all the huge, sprawling, infinitely varying chains of cause and effect, end in one of three cases. Case one, Vriska Circuit goes and fights Lord English. For case one, you reach back into the sidebar, pull out your best friends, have Jane give you another makeover, have John give all three of you another kick through time, and start over. Case two, you fuck up in some obvious way before you even get to the lily pad, no big deal, sidebar, best friends, start over. Case three, you fuck up in some non-obvious way, and Gamzee Makara happens. Case three doesn't happen very often. But it does happen often enough that you'd go so far as to call it very fucking annoying, and it's so weird how consistent it is. After a while, you begin keeping half a nostril on Gamzee all the time. His mind makes little to no sense to you. It never did, at least not in a causal sense, not in a motivational sense. And when he isn't at least three sheets to the soporific wind, it doesn't make any sense at all. A never-ending playlist of human slam poetry recitals, swirling, rapidly shifting colors, the face of the wooden felt abomination known as Will Cal, bizarre and completely nonsensical impulses to do utterly unconnected things. Well, not utterly unconnected. This is a big, big, big moment for you as you slowly piece this together. You don't know what it means yet, though somehow you are certain that it connects to some greater truth about all of this, somehow. But you do figure out what he's doing. He's making sure that Lord English happens. No matter what stupid, asinine, weird-ass, random-ass, troll Rube Goldberg-ass shit that purple little bastard has to do, he will do it. With the one goal of making Lord English happen. And he's really good at it. Gamzee Makara will make him happen. He knows what to do. He knows where to be. He knows when to be there. It very quickly becomes apparent to you that when Gamzee tracks you down, he's doing it because somehow something you did, something you changed, has made it impossible for Lord English to happen. And on those occasions, he knows what to do, he knows where to be, and he knows when to be there to fucking murder you. This is extremely alarming. It isn't a very big deal, since it seems that death by Gamzee can never be just, and it certainly isn't heroic in your case, and he's always gone by the time you wake up, so case three has the same solution as cases one and two, with an added stop to make, so that's not really all that much of a pain, but it's really not supposed to be possible for anyone to beat you in a fight. This is not how human fights work. On the occasions where you kill whatever timeline's version of Tavros or John, yes, that is harder than usual, but you know why that's happening. It's because of all that stupid breath blowing around in their minds, and it would take someone way better attuned to their aspect than either of them to really pose a problem to you. Gamzee isn't just a problem. He's a force of honking nature, and you don't think it's anything in particular to do with his aspect. And it isn't like you can kill him before he kills you. That at least does make sense to you. Lord English has to exist, so Gamzee has to exist. Kill him and you doom the timeline. When you look at it like that, you start to appreciate the gross little motherfucker. If you've made Lord English impossible, then you're already in a doomed timeline. You just don't know it yet. So having him as a kind of alarm clock is useful. And he is really good at hurting you. So there is also that. But the big realization, the really big one, the one that changes everything, comes later. It comes in the wake of an absolute disaster that almost ruins everything.
Be present, Jade. You hope Becky won't be too disappointed about the party. He's such a great kid. You hope Zazerpan won't set anything on fire, not because of the party, just anyway. You hope Roxy likes your new boyfriend? She probably will. She usually does. You hope Jake is doing better. Your name is Jade Harley. And you're juggling a lot of balls right now, and so is Roxy, and so are Rose and Latch, and that's the way it's been since you all became parents. It's stressful, and it's all-encompassing, and you wouldn't trade it for the world. Oh yeah, Rose is saying something. Mother, I have a meeting with Carcat in 5. Can you tell the kids to go to Swifer's for the rest of the day? I don't want them knowing about this.
That is like the number one way to make sure they know about this, Rose.
I want them out of the way.
Oh, really?
Final mission briefing is in 3 hours at 1500. Jade, how's Jake doing?
He's doing a lot better. He's hanging out with Becky and Tuna at our place.
Is he good for this?
I'll ask him, but he'd say yes even if he wasn't.
That's why I'm asking you and not him. Is he good for this, Jade?
Yes, I think so.
Make sure.
Ephraim.
Latchula.
Yeah, babe?
Rose whispers in Latch's ear and she flushes teal.
Aw. You two are so fucking weird.
I think it's sweet.
You're weird too, Gigi.
At least I'm not into bestiality.
Okay, I want a fucking divorce.
Oh my god, both of you, shut the fuck up or get the fuck out. Away from me. That's an order.
Yes, Mom.
Do not. And please tell Becky and Zazerpan I'm sorry about the party. We can do it tomorrow at the latest. But hopefully then we'll have more than one thing to celebrate.
Love you, Rose.
I love you too, Mother.
Hmm.
You squeeze your wife's hand. Crackle. Causeway East turns into the door outside Hive 31J. Roxy knocks.
Who's knocking?
Hey, Swifer, can you take the kids?
The door opens.
Mission?
Yep.
Party?
Nope.
Phooey.
Tomorrow, probably. It depends on how things go.
Always does, Mrs. Bow Wow.
She winks at you, then looks at both you and Roxy in turn.
It's big, ain't it?
You both nod. She lets out a slow whistle.
You're behind the eight ball, ain't you?
You both nod again, because you're pretty sure you know what that means.
Well, sock it to her, you hear me? Put that tomato in a can.
What?
I'm sorry?
Fit to Resi Pyropy for a wooden kimono.
Le fuck?
Kill her.
And make it hurt.
That's clear enough. You both nod more firmly.
So does she. And when you get back, we'll have us that party. Depending on how things go. Either way, I'll keep them out of trouble for you.
Stuff them full of sugar and popcorn and junk. Big hug. Crackle. The door outside Hive 31J turns into the rumpus block of Lalande Hive.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Mom.
Hello, Grandmother. Hello, Grandma. Hey, babies. Head to Swifer's.
Mission?
Work stuff.
Party?
Probably not.
Sorry, Zaz.
I'm sorry, Zaz.
Tomorrow, we can do it tomorrow. Sis says sorry, too.
It's okay.
You're pretty sure she means it? Zazerpan's never really been too big on birthdays, probably. You hate this. She stands, Jasper's in her arms. Your hackles raise infinitesimally. You lower them.
Oh, leave Jasper's. Jasper's goes where she wants, Mom.
Not to Swifer, she's allergic.
All right.
You be good.
You too, Naya.
Happy birthday, Zaz. I'm really sorry.
Okay, Audi.
Crackle. The rumpus block of Lalande Hive turns into the living room of the Harley Apartments, and you hear behind you the single word,
Killjoy.
Mama! I had a kiltacular!
Fucking lol.
Why'd you warp you and Mom in front of the screen?
Oh, sorry.
Even your mom wants you to suck at Halo.
I don't want anybody to suck at Halo!
Move!
Fine, sorry.
You two finish this match and pack it up. You're going to Slifer's.
I don't want to go to Slifer's!
You like Slifer.
But we're playing Halo!
Jesus fucking Christ, you can take Halo with you.
Yeah, I love Slifer's.
Slifer's latency kind of blows.
Oh, what was that you just said about excuses?
The boys wrap it up and begin the process of disconnecting and capture logging about 12 consoles.
Wait, what about the party?
All right, Becky, I'm really sorry, buddy, we can't.
You are a monster. You are the worst. You hate this.
We can't do the party today. Work stuff, it just came up. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay, Mom.
Well, you know it's tomorrow, Becky boy, okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
You can skip school even. Zaz too.
Oh, cool, that'll be great.
Come here, boy.
Big hug.
Good dog. Best friend.
Long hug. He and Tuna finish packing up, say goodbye to Jake, and take off for Swifers. I almost couldn't tell, but it's the ears, of course. Always the ears. He was very disappointed, wasn't he?
He didn't want us to feel bad.
Gets that from you, Gigi.
And you?
Yeah.
God, it has the opposite effect, though. I feel so much worse about it now, you know?
For real.
Becky is a wonderful boy. He really is.
Are you doing better? How are you doing?
Well, in fact, Becky was mostly successful there.
What did he do?
Well, he brought me breakfast, like you asked him to, and we talked some, as you do, and when I was done, he sort of studied me. Like I do when I'm trying to figure out what emotion someone is feeling, and he just took my hand and pulled me straight out of my room and all the way here. He sat me down in front of the telly and said, one player or two player?
Oh my fucking god.
Oh my fucking god.
I know. I sort of owed it to him to feel better after that.
I'm gonna cry, holy shit.
You are crying, Gigi.
Shut up.
Kiss on Jake.
No, I gotta stop. I gotta stop. Okay, Jake. Are you really better? Like, enough for the mission, better?
Ah, yes, work stuff.
Rose told me to make sure, because...
Perfectly fit for duty, yes.
That's good, because it's... Well, fuck.
No, Gigi, this... This has gotta be me.
Jake, I gotta...
I gotta tell you something. Kinda good news, bad news kind of thing. It's about... Janie.
Be past Terezi.
You fucked up. You fucked up about as badly as it is possible for someone to fuck up. You cannot emphasize enough that it was just an idea. So you'd been on this kick recently where you'd been trying various things with Riska's Lucis. In terms of what makes your darling Moiriel tick, it's a target-rich environment. Plenty of angles, plenty. It was inevitable that you'd eventually do this one, come on. So you brought Spider-Mom into the session. Maybe if Vriska was able to reconcile with the big bug lady, if they could see eye to eightfold eye, she'd be less driven to prove herself, that's all. It makes sense. Okay, maybe it loses a bit of coherence around the whole question of how exactly that reconciliation takes place. And if one were to raise that point, they would have you dead to rights, because that reconciliation did not take place. What did take place was that Spider-Mom broke free of containment on Prospect, gorged herself on Carapacians, and gave birth to a fucking army of spider-wigglers that killed damn near everybody and turned the entire Incipisphere into the land of arachnids and hubris. You barely even remember why any of you thought it was a good idea to take Spider-Mom to Prospect in the first place. A richer food supply? Well, she certainly got it if that was the reason. All you know for certain is that this session is absolutely fucked. And you can't even scratch it because you don't have the tools to do that. You can't get them, and no one can help you because, did you mention, damn near everybody is dead. Including Vriska, because of course she is, because fuck you. And why are you even thinking about scratching the session? Surely this is a classic case two scenario. Why don't you just reach into your wallet because you don't have your wallet? You lost your wallet. You lost your wallet, and you deserve this. You deserve every bit of this because you are such an idiot. You are such an idiot, and you have no idea what to do. Because it's been sweeps, sweeps, and sweeps. sweeps and sweeps, and the timeline just keeps going. It just keeps going and going and going, with fighting and spiders and running and spiders and hiding and spiders and spiders and spiders and spiders. You're fucked. And here you stand. On the beach. On a little archipelago in the sea of what used to be the land of maps and treasure. This has been a pretty good hiding place for you for the last few sweeps, and the fact that Vriska may once have been here, in this exact spot, is of at least some comfort to you. But it's not enough comfort. Because you have spent the last few days tearing down the hut you've been living in. And with the pieces, you have built a gallows. And that is where you are standing now. You smell the sky and the map it used to make before spiders tore it to shreds. You smell the light which cuts around the entire horizon, an eternal sunset without a sun. It smells like an eclipse. You pull the lever.
Be past Terezi.
Your name is Terezi Pyrope, and the light on the ocean burns your eyes. You try to scream, to screech out your anguish and despair, and you can't because the goddamn rope is still around your fucking windhole, and you kick and you flail and you pull, and your vision almost goes black, and you almost die again before you remember that you have wings when you want them. You don't really want them, but you flutter them, give yourself enough slack, rip off the noose, and when you fall to the sand just in front of the platform, you don't even want to scream anymore. You don't even want to cry.
I just want her.
Do you mean that?
Holy fucking shit!
He's behind you. He's sitting on the upper beam of your gallows, lazy eyelids half closed, expression dreamy behind his face paint.
Are you all up and motherfucking mean in that shit you just went and said?
Where were you? Where the fucking hell were you? What fucking good are you now? What am I supposed to fucking do?
A club smashes into the side of your head. You go flying and land face first in the surf, cough, splutter, ow. He's lifting you back up by your hair. You get your feet planted and twist around, shoving at him, but he cannot be moved, and his eyes are no longer half closed. He pummels you relentlessly as he speaks your...
Supposed to answer
my...
Motherfucking question, motherfucker!
Do you mean it?
Even after this?
Do you still motherfucking mean it?
Even after all this shit?
Are you just making sounds with that word hole that feel good but ain't true?
Or do you still want your bitch?
Yes.
Prove it. You duck his next blow and tackle him to the ground, rolling in the wet sand, clawing at him, biting, ripping, tearing. He knows what you're trying to do. He knows when you're going to do it, but you do it faster than he can dodge, hit him harder than he can take, break his limbs before he can use them against you. And as your hands wrap around his throat, you can see the snarl, the inferno on your face through the window of his mind and reflected in his eyes. His eyes, massive, orange, bloodshot with purple, and round with inscrutable, directionless rage that snap shut, that bulge open even as their own light begins to go out. He throws you off of him with one last spasm of strength, and you find a piece of driftwood and ram it straight through one of those horrible fucking eyes. The other one closes, then opens slowly until it rests at the exact halfway point up his gander ball. He manages one last gurgling sentence.
Well, ain't that just a motherfucking miracle and shit?
He doesn't feel fear, doesn't feel regret, doesn't feel a single goddamn thing as you kill him for the first time ever. You sit there, straddling his corpse for what feels like ages, staring with your eyes at the blasted, ruined sky. The spiders had made meteors of their egg sacs, infesting worlds in a too familiar apocalyptic rain. One of the holes left in the sky by that rain reveals to you a distant disk of brilliant blue. Skaya. You stare at this far too dim sun, this palest of copies, as it slowly retreats back behind a map that no longer leads to anywhere, leaving only the burning, searing agony that's crushed tighter than ever by the world around you. The world that shouldn't exist. You stop breathing faster. In a timeline that should have collapsed sweeps ago and faster. A timeline that the game was never going to be won in and faster. A timeline that Lord English will never be born in and the light is crushed tighter. A timeline that has no stories left to tell and tighter. Unless the story, you look down and you see it. Clutched in his gross, dead hand. Your wallet.
Unless the story was always about me.
The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. The music is .413 Repeating, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.